Chris Kennedy's in our studio. I shouldn't have shaken your hand, Chris, because you know you've got a lot of people to meet. You've got a demanding schedule, and I've got a cold. I hope I don't give you anything.
Well, that would have been good to know about 2 minutes ago.
Now, you were on this radio station earlier today with Steve Cochran. Has anything changed in the last 9 hours since you were on WGN?
The city's getting warmer. That's what I'd say.
That's true.
At least I feel it.
Well, I wanted to have a conversation with you as well. And though Steve did earlier, maybe mine will be a little different. Maybe it will be similar. But if you didn't hear it then, here you are now talking to us about charges that you leveled against Rahm Emanuel the other day. And Steve Bertrand and I, my newsman, and I had a conversation about this, as well as our listeners. And we're trying to get a read on what you meant and why you said what you said. Let's just go back and start it all over again. What's your take on gentrification or what's been happening to people of color in the city of Chicago?
I think if you look at the places in the city of Chicago where people of color live predominantly, they're the places where we've cut off access to mental health care. They're the places that people are forced to live in food deserts. They're the places where the properties that they live in are overtaxed, overassessed. And the combination of those forces, along with higher crime rates, really results in a situation where people are being pushed out of the city, driven out by a lack of a quality life. And that's what's happening in our city. The city of Chicago is becoming smaller. And as it becomes smaller, it's becoming whiter. And that's not the way it needs to be. It doesn't have to be like that, and it isn't that way in other cities.
And what do you say about Rahm Emanuel's hand in that?
Well, I think the decisions that have been made around allowing grocery stores to close or allowing the city to shut half the mental health facilities, the fact that we have fewer police officers on the street than we did 10 years ago, the fact that we abandoned community policing for a period of time, those are decisions made by the city. And they may be made by maybe the Department of Education. They may be made by CPS. They may be made by the police department. But those are decisions that are ultimately the responsibility of the mayor of the city of Chicago. He sets the tone at the top. He may not have made those decisions. There may not be a plan that's written out. But he needs to be held accountable for the fact that the city's becoming smaller and whiter.
But the word that appeared in your statement previously was strategic. You made it sound as though almost that was the goal.
Well, I think that it's really interesting. In the subject of civil rights, the notion of intent, the way the law looks at the issue is that you don't have to prove intention. All you have to do is prove outcome. Intention is nearly impossible to prove. You don't know what's in someone's heart or someone's mind. But the outcome, the results, can be clear. And by looking at those results, looking at that outcome, you can, well, hold somebody responsible for the violation of that law. And in the same way, I think we can hold people responsible for the outcomes as they've occurred in the city.
Okay, so the motivation doesn't matter. It's what is the result. And if we're pushing people of color out of a city, it's too expensive, it's too difficult for them to find lodging and employment and food here, then it doesn't matter what your motivation is. The point is they have no place to go.
And lodging, food, safety,
sure, and
healthcare, but the education.
But the inference is that the mayor or the city doesn't care, or that they want it this way. Now, and maybe that's the fault of the listener rather than the speaker. Are you suggesting that that's the way the mayor wants it, or that this is the design?
Well, I think in the notion of with Catholic social justice, there's this idea that we're held responsible not just for the acts that we commit, but for the things that we omit. There's a notion of commission and omission. And either way, whether it's commission or omission, it's equally wrong. And either way, what's happening in the city is obvious, it's occurring, and no one is making any effort to stop it.
But Chris, you're not saying that the mayor is racist about this, are you?
That's a better question for the mayor. I'm certainly not. I don't know what's in his heart. I don't know what's in his mind. I don't know that that's his motivation. But I'm telling you, what is occurring is race-based, and we can't tolerate that. That's a violation of everything that you know, the people who are our age grew up with, the whole notion of the civil rights movement and the enormous expansion is now being rolled back.
Some of the people I've talked to at the Tribune and other places say, you're right about the first part, but this playing with the race-based nature of what's happening is maybe an overreach on your part, maybe not even a good political move on your part. You need people of color to vote for you if you want to become governor of the state. Maybe this aligns you with that voter base better, but that's not a fair or accurate thing to say about Rahm Emanuel.
Well, I'd say this. If you think the comments that I'm making are designed to win an election, I have to say this. There are far more white voters than there are African-American voters in a primary and in a general election. If I wanted to do the things that were politically correct, I probably wouldn't take on Mike Madigan. If I wanted to do the things that are politically correct, I wouldn't take on the chairman of the Democratic Party in Cook County.
I wonder why you take on Rahm Emanuel, for that matter. I mean, he's a Democrat, right?
He's a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. But the Democratic Party that I think of myself as being part of is not one that would allow what's occurring in the city of Chicago to occur. We've had more meetings, more group meetings, community meetings to think about how we can bring Amazon to Illinois than we have to consider how we can retain people in the city of Chicago and keep them from moving away. Our city's becoming smaller. That's not good for anyone. Our state's becoming smaller. That's not good for anyone. What are we going to do about those two big issues?
And what are we going to do about those?
I think we have to invest in education. When you and I graduated from high school and college, people who are our age, we moved to where the jobs were. That's not the way the American economy works anymore. Today, the jobs move to where the highly educated kids are. If we give the world highly educated high school students and highly educated college kids, the world will give us its jobs. That's why downtown Chicago is doing so well, because Chicago is today the largest college town in America. That's what's driving employment, because we're giving the world highly educated kids. But are those kids our kids, or are those kids from other states who are coming to school in Chicago?
The Chicago Tribune has started a hashtag, Illinois Exodus. I don't know if you're familiar with this. I just found out about this today. If you are on social media and use the hashtag Illinois Exodus, or you can search it yourself, they're looking for stories from people who are leaving Illinois or have left Illinois. And why? Why this Illinois Exodus? And they're looking to tell that story. And that's troubling. I mean, you know, speaking on behalf of those people that are here and plan on staying here, that means we're going to have, if you think it's expensive now, we're going to have to pick up a higher percentage of the bills and taxes if we have fewer people paying them.
Absolutely. You want everybody in the state to be able to put their shoulder to the common wheel with all of us. Everybody to be a taxpayer. Everybody to contribute economically.
But that is a reason, then, is it not, Chris, to put all resources into getting Amazon to come here or a major corporation to come here, right?
Well, the thing is, what is the great economic play in the United States? What has worked in other cities and other decades consistently? And there's only one thing that's ever worked well, and that is the power of higher education research institutions. The great economies are Silicon Valley, Austin, Texas, Research Triangle, North Carolina, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Boston, Massachusetts, Akron, Ohio. All of those places have great higher education and a supply chain of high school and grade school kids that are going to those college, preparing them to work in great jobs in the future. That's what we need here. And we have great public colleges near every population center in the entire state. We have a solution, and it's available to us, and we should invest in it.
So what do you do? How do you marshal that? How do you make that? Where's our Silicon Valley then? What happens?
Well, I think you could see it working here in Chicago. You could see it working in places like Champaign, Urbana. You could see it working in places like around Northern, out in DeKalb, where there's a growing high-tech sector around aeronautics. And we need to invest in those public universities and in the other colleges and universities that are part of the ecosystem that's critical to the success. Amazon's a great idea, but you got to remember that the alumni of MIT alone have started 30,000 companies that employ 4.5 million people. It's great to get an Amazon, But what we really want is another MIT, and we already have the University of Illinois. We have public colleges that are great in scale and do incredible research, and we've cut off funding for them. We've attacked them in every way possible over the last couple of years.
So that's your idea, more money to colleges in Illinois?
Well, I'd restore the funding that we used to have, but I'd fix the grade school, the high school, and the early childhood education funding model that we need to support that network of colleges.
I don't know that this is the business of a governor, but what do you think about free college education for 4 years? What do you think about student loan debt forgiveness?
I think that all of those things should be means tested. I don't know why you'd give the wealthiest families in the state free access to the University of Illinois. I'd move away from the notion of what they call merit-based scholarship, which really goes to the people who score highest on, let's say, the ACT. Almost all of them come from wealthy families or wealthy suburbs. We need to go back to the need-based model where we can provide kids that come from any background access to great universities like the University of Illinois.
We're talking about education. If we were talking just about your campaign or your campaign, would education be the first thing you would want to talk
about?
That's
what I've talked about the entire time. And what I've tried to show is that the education is our route out of this mess. We have declining taxable assets and the need for rising taxes. That's the economic equivalent of circling the drain. We need an expanding economy. As you said, we need more people to support the business of government. How do we do that? There's only one economic model that's ever worked in multiple cities in multiple decades, and that's the power of higher education. The problem is that we have a pipeline of high school and grade schools that are underperforming other states. They're underperforming because they're underfunded. They're underfunded because we rely on property taxes. We rely on property taxes to fund our schools because a handful of elected officials make money as property tax appeals lawyers. And they're stopping us from moving to a different system to fund our schools like the other states with great outcomes have.
I'm not running for governor, but I want to be king someday. And when I get to be king, you have to pick one. You can either represent the city and your district in Chicago, or you can represent millionaires who want to get their property taxes reduced. I think millionaires or homeowners who want to get their property taxes reduced, that is 100% legitimate operation, or at least request. If you want to do that, more power to you.
80% of them are granted.
So that may be another conversation, but I don't think there's anything inherently corrupt or wrong with anybody wanting their valuation to go down, or at least the valuation to reflect what it should be. Get it right. And if it means go down, then fine. Lucky you. But I don't think you can do both. I don't think you can represent the people in a ward in Chicago and also those people that want to see their taxes reduced, because when the taxes get reduced on the Trump Tower, then everybody else has to pick up the slack. And that means all the rest of us who weren't so lucky or smart. And that's happening in Chicago right now. I don't know what the way around that is, but when I get to be king, I'm going to wave my magic wand.
Well, the way around it is so straightforward. We need to ban elected officials from having outside jobs that are adverse to the interest of the body they were elected to serve. That's fancy language for we need to ban them from being property tax appeals lawyers.
Okay, but I'll bet we could find other conflicts of interest like we've just described.
Let's start with that one, because that's how we fund our government.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing.
Really? So you would single out that one specific profession and say you can't do both?
You can't do both. Absolutely. And I think that we're totally within our rights. The idea that that's a foreign suggestion, we hold our congressmen, our representatives, our United States senators to that standard. We ought to hold our state reps and our state senators to it as well.
Some texters have chimed in. John, how would your guest stop a grocery store from closing? Somebody else texted, I didn't realize the city government was responsible for grocery store placement. You made it sound as though the Rahm Emanuel administration was responsible for grocery stores closing. Those are private businesses that operate due to market forces. What's your response to those?
Well, those market forces are active in every city in the United States, and there are certainly cities where they'll accommodate zoning requests if the grocery store chain agrees to place grocery stores in other neighborhoods as well. That's very common in other cities. You may not like that, but the truth is it occurs in other places across America, and we ought to fight for the neighborhoods just as we give away the downtown.
Chris Kennedy's in our studio. What would he do to stop and close loopholes to easily buying guns in Indiana and Wisconsin and bringing them to Chicago?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is license all the gun dealers in Illinois. And in doing that, I think then we get some of the illegitimate businesses out and we start to create a group of interested parties that want to enforce laws in the state. That is the homegrown gun dealers who are in Illinois. We can bring them together and create a force that starts to stop the flow of guns from places like Indiana and Kentucky.
Just a couple quick calls. Andy is on line two and had a question for you. Andy, you're on WGN with Chris Kennedy. Hi.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Mr. Kennedy, there. I like to make three quick points, and I think the one of the main reasons that people are moving, and I think I'm going to be pretty accurate. A lot of people are afraid of really coming out and saying it. One of them is Eddie Johnson, the police superintendent, as he said many times, there are 1,400 thugs in the city that are making the city look bad, and their police department is not given the opportunity to do their job, mainly because of, he can't say it, the ACLU and the civil rights movement. And
Andy, what's your question going to be, Andy?
And the question, right, is the thing is the police will not stop everybody that they think he's bad because they might have to sit there and answer 72 questions that it takes an hour to fill.
Okay, let's let him respond to that. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd say this. I think we haven't done a good job supporting our police department. We've had an incredible number of long-term police officials retire. An entire generation is leaving the police force. That's leaving younger police officers without mentors. That's a serious relationship, and maybe mentoring relationships sound like something that, you know, happens in business, but there's no place where it happens with greater impact than in the police force. And without those older police officers there, the experienced ones, to help younger police officers along, we don't have any of the value of that experience. We've removed a lot of the training for the police department and haven't restored that funding, and that robs young officers of one of the great benefits and perks of being a police officer. We've reduced the number of police officers. We're not fully funding our police force because of the property tax racket that limits our ability to do so. And we come right back to that same issue over and over again. A handful of people are making money, and they're related to Joe Berrios and a handful of property tax appeals lawyers like Mike Madigan.
Andy, thanks for the call. Chris, I know that you're now late for other appointments. I've taken more of your time than I should have. I sure appreciate you coming in and visiting with us today. You were on with Steve Cochran earlier. We've got a standing invitation to the mayor. I'd love to get him in on this conversation as well. Maybe we'll visit again.
Look forward to it, and I'll definitely bring some Purell next time I come.
I think I'm past the contagious point, but
everyone always does.
If you come down with a cold, my apologies.